Not all meals are created equal. For instance, breakfast has the spicy egg McMuffin for a limited time, and lunch doesn't. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide-leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
There's a certain kind of silence that doesn't come from lack of evidence. It comes from too many people benefiting from the same lie. The Epstein case has always been this kind of silence. Today's conversation with former FBI counterintelligence behavioral chief Robin Dreeke gets to the rotten core of it, not just what's being hidden, but how and by whom. Because when the current head of the FBI says there's no list, you gotta ask if there is one. Who's keeping it above even his clearance? We break down how investigations like this actually work inside the Bureau, not the movie version with a single agent kicking down doors, but the sprawling network of interviews, field offices, source reports, digital case files, internal memos, and oversight layers. Robin takes us deep into the mechanics. Who sees what? How data gets funneled to HQ? And why it's not as simple as just pulling the Epstein folder, or the Epstein folder, off the shelf. And then we ask the real question. If this information did exist, proof of high-level trafficking to powerful people, how many players would it take to bury it? Not many, apparently. Maybe just one compromised agent, one unsent report, one lost interview in a field office of 2,000 miles away. If that data never makes it into the system can truthfully say it doesn't exist. This episode also confronts what should be the headline. Where are the victims' voices? Maxwell was convicted of trafficking. Epstein's dead. But who were the crimes committed for? And why is no one aggressively following that thread? We're past debating whether the Epstein case is suspicious. Now we're asking why no one in power, left or right, wants it resolved. Maybe it's not about protecting parties. Maybe it's about protecting the entire ecosystem. So let's start where the silence gets its loudest. Robin, when the former FBI director says there's no list, and yet victims, interviews, and data points to one clearly existing, what does it tell you about the system and how it's set up to shield itself? If the current head of the FBI says there's no list and he's never seen the list, then if there is a list, who's holding that back? Who's higher than that has the strings to make sure they don't have that to even consider in any sort of investigation because it never gets to them?
So he did a good job when I saw him on this interview a couple of weeks ago. And I can see both Bongino, Patel kind of going through his machinations of trying to understand how to find things in the FBI. Because people don't understand. You'd think you could actually walk into a room and see what you need to see, because there's a room that's marked, you know.
Jeffrey Epstein's list of craziness. Yeah,
yes,
yeah, here
yes,
it is.
The Epstein case.
It's right on that file. We just went to the card catalog and found the shelf.
So basically, here's what it would look like. So say I was still in the FBI now, working in the out of the Richmond office like I did before I retired in the Fredericksburg office here. Generally, when big cases like this happen or big request comes in, because I've responded to many of these, what happens is an all bureau email goes out. In that email that goes out from the headquarters, from the legal division, it'll say, a task has been put out. We need to have any information, both from confidential human sources, interviews, and cases you conducted that relate to this. You need to have this submitted to FBI headquarters through your supervisor, whatever it is, by such and such a date. That goes out to all field divisions across the bureau. And you have to respond, and I'll tell you, they cancel leave, they cancel everything to get people to respond to these inquests that come out. And so that's how it then gets all filtered in, it gets synthesized down, because investigations there's going to be a single point of failure success with that one case agent in the middle, but there's tons of spokes all over the bureau, subcases, other sources, everything that's opened up to support that one investigative thing. So in other words, the case agent that is in charge of the case right here might not necessarily know all the nooks and crannies way out here on the other side of the country mm-hmm. that an interview has been conducted, the nuances of that interview, or maybe the case agent was too lazy, didn't upload that interview. Or maybe there's like, you know what? I don't want to be involved in this crap because it's going to end my career. I'm going to just toss this shit and pretend it didn't happen. I'm not saying that's what happened because that'd be very rare and unusual, mm-hmm. but there's so many people involved in investigation when it happens. It's very difficult, one, to rally it all together into a comprehensive thing that an executive five levels up from that case agent can then get access to and know exactly what they're looking at. Because, mm-hmm. like I said, there might be 150 people that are associated with the Epstein thing, as was indicated before by the judge, but that was gleaned by maybe 150 different interviews across the country that said, hey, I think I saw this guy show up on Epstein Island. That happened in, you know, maybe an investigator in San Juan. Then they had someone in Las Vegas say they interviewed someone else. And they said, you know, I think I saw, not in firsthand knowledge, but I think I saw such and such there at such and such a date. So that's a data point. So in other words, you have multiple data points from all over the country, from multiple interviews that then have to collect together what was firsthand knowledge, what's third-hand knowledge, what's hearsay, what's been verified, where the sources came from. So see what I mean?
Yeah.
It can get very complicated very rapidly. And for one executive to say definitively, here's the list, I'm not saying it's not, but that's what goes into even the idea of compiling a list.
At the same point, would it not really just take one agent to be compromised if they have a very big piece of evidence, a big piece of data that they're going to be bringing to this, this chart that may, you know, implicate people. If that one person, somebody got to them, I don't know who, but somebody with the interest of that person's name not coming out into the investigation, I mean, then you don't have to go to the head investigator to the top of any of this. You just have to get to the one person who may have the piece of that puzzle that they're going to add to the bigger picture. And if that person can be stopped, well, then that you solve that problem.
That's challenging. And I'll tell you why that's challenging. When I first came in the Bureau, it would have been less challenging. When I first came in the Bureau, everything was done on paper mm-hmm. files. And when it's on paper file, it's a lot more limited access to those things. And we had a system that was in place, but it was less user-friendly. But as by the time I retired, everything was automated. Everything was uploaded. Everything's scanned. Everything's put in. Everything is uploaded. And In order to have restricted access to that case, you actually had to get higher level approvals to have restricted access. And to have only one case agent to have access to a case file without oversight from a supervisor, without oversight from headquarters, without mm-hmm. oversight from legal, I don't know how you could.
So not really,
Okay. And also at a high level type interviews. So anytime you're going to be interviewing, matter of fact, here's a great example. A good friend of mine ran leak investigations that I worked with, and he actually did leak investigations because I'm just south of DC. We did leak investigations out of the Pentagon. Mm-hmm. And he's interviewing high level officials in the Pentagon. This is a number of years ago of Secretary of Defense. And when you're doing those kind of high level interviews, you think just a case agent's going to those, you know, lowly guy like me on these interviews? No, he actually had another case agent went with him, and someone from FBI headquarters, an executive, had to show up for that interview as well. So you had at least three FBI people in that room, as well as the individual being interviewed and someone from his staff as well. So there's so many. The intent is always to have all these checks and balances put in place to keep from something like that from happening. Is it possible? Yes, but it takes a huge effort to do something like that. The example of it going sideways is Pete Strzok, the infamous Pete Strzok at FBI headquarters, the assistant director for counterintelligence. What he was accused of doing was creating a file at headquarters for an investigation against Trump. That's kind of in layman's terms. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you do that. So files inside the FBI, investigations at the FBI, can only really be started at the field office level.
Mm-hmm.
They're managed and oversight by headquarters, but headquarters doesn't have an investigative arm. So there's no reason to have investigations based out of headquarters that can be controlled from one central hub. They're always going to be controlled in the field
mm-hmm.
and oversight and the oversight from FBI headquarters. So everyone along that chain has all the access. So those are very, very, now granted, there was investigations we did on the counterintelligence side, like the Trump thing would have been, very high level, very compartmentalized. I mean, we hand walked files over to DOJ all the time that were not uploaded in the normal way. But there's always more than just one or two people involved in something like that. I've never known a case, and I've worked really super high level ones at that same level. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to imagine that could happen.
Yeah.
It's very hard to imagine. As much as people want to believe the conspiracy on that side, and I'm with you. There was more to this because of Trump's reaction and everything in there. There's more to it than we're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not quite sure what it is, though.
I think the big question now is, I mean, list whatever it's anyone wants to call it, just data of that fact that there was a lot of people. I mean, look, they indicted Ghislaine Maxwell, you know, for trafficking. Well, who did she traffic? Because we have no list.
Yes.
So that's a big question. You have victims that are still alive out there, some who are not, that are probably wondering, along with a lot of other people, okay, the government has seen the accusations against a lot of big people in this. You have this list. Why aren't you doing anything? Yes, Epstein is dead. These victims are still alive. Is it because Epstein can't be there to back any of this up anymore or flip? And because if you just stay silent on this, really nothing will happen to these people because they have the influence and the power and we don't want to disrupt that. There clearly is data here that shows people were being trafficked to high power people, and it is being that information is being stopped by the government from coming out. Why?
That is the real crime here, Tony. That's where I'm on. You and I are always about the victims. And I don't know why that's not being looked at more. Or maybe it is and we just don't know it. You know,
there's nothing, then there's nothing. But if there's
I don't think so. I'm with you. Why are we not focusing on the victims of this? Because like you said, there's still victims out there that were traumatized by this, that were trafficked supposedly by this. And they're going to have a story. How come we haven't heard any of those stories? I'm with you on that one. That because I don't care about the list if it doesn't do anything on who was there. But if the victims can then identify people, that's what we should be really taking a look at investigating.
Yeah.
And why isn't that being done? So I'm with you on that one.
Yeah. There's a lot of questions. I mean, this will go on until everybody's dead, I'm sure. And then our grandchildren will look back going, oh, here's what really happened. Wouldn't it be fun if they knew now?
Isn't like just like they know about JFK, right?
Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah, well, maybe I think we'll maybe get that at some point. Maybe
we're getting it. It's leakage. Maybe, they're trying.
Maybe I don't know. Yeah, I don't know that we'll even see that one. Fascinating topic and fascinating story. And yeah, I mean, we'll keep watching it if it ever gets anywhere beyond this. But I don't know. I don't know that it will. Do you think we're ever going to see? I mean, it seems like it's kind of a closed case at this point.
It does, because it looks like both sides want to keep it hidden.
Yeah. So here we are again at the intersection of justice and self-preservation, and once again, justice is nowhere to be found. Robin Dreek just gave us a brutally honest look inside the large-scale investigations and how they're built, filtered, and if someone up the chain wants it bad enough, derailed. Not with some dramatic inside job, not with secret rooms and shredded files, just with a memo that never gets written, a name that never gets logged, a victim who's never asked the right questions. What makes this episode so disturbing isn't that we learn something new, it's that we keep not learning the same thing over and over. Maxwell was convicted of trafficking. The government has acknowledged at least 150 names connected to Epstein through court documents, but we're still pretending we don't know who the buyers were. If the list, or the data, as we've started calling it, is real, it's being protracted by both sides of the political machine. And if it's not, then we're still looking at a system so broken it can't even keep track of who was on Epstein's island. Either way, it's a failure. And let's be honest, this isn't about a list anymore. It's about victims who were trafficked, people who were assaulted, and yet the most powerful law enforcement agencies in the world are treating the entire case like a PR problem instead of a criminal one. Why? Because if the truth ever fully came out, it wouldn't just be a scandal, it would be a systematic collapse. Robin reminded us that the Bureau is filled with good people. People who want to do the right thing, but that doesn't mean that they always get the right information. When leadership only sees what someone else allows through the filter, the whole game is rigged from the start. And if you think that's just about Epstein, think again. Next time you hear someone say, "There is no list," don't ask, "Where's the proof?" Ask, "Who benefits from keeping it invisible?" Because at this point, it's not about solving the case. It's about protecting the illusion that no one at the top has anything to hide. Tell me your thoughts in the comments section on YouTube. That's where we like to have our conversation. So please join us over there if you're not already on YouTube. Search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi and press subscribe. Hit subscribe on the podcast platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeart, wherever you're listening to us, so you don't miss us there as well. At the very least, wherever you're at, hit subscribe so you don't miss our coverage on this and the many cases we got for you here at the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. I'm Tony Bruschi. Thank you for listening. Tell me your thoughts. We'll talk again real soon.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.